The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz.
Good evening and welcome to the Business Buzz right here on VOW FM 88.1. The time has just gone by 6:03 PM and it's a Thursday, which means it's time for the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on VOW FM 88.1. We are broadcasting live from our studios right here in Bramfontein, Johannesburg. And, if you don't already know, my name is Mudiwa Mob Justice Gavaza and I'm joined in studio by the lovely Hlengiwe Zondo. How are you, Hlengiwe?
I'm good. Thanks, Mudiwa. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How's your life going? You know, I think this time of the year, you know, as October comes to an end and November draws nearer, there's this thing called exams that tends to, you know, come upon us.
You just had to go there.
Are you getting ready?
I'm appreciating the finer things in life, that like the jacaranda trees.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on the positive things in life. That's okay. What I'm trying to do right now.
I think that's a very good attitude that you've adopted there.
Thank you. And you? How's your week been?
No, it's been a good week.
Awesome.
It's been a very good week. Busy. I think adulting is not easy.
Like, not at all.
It's kicking us. It's kicking us. I feel like people need to change the curriculum at school. Hey, this thing of math, science, English, history, and what? No.
They need to add.
Tell us about life, real life. Tell me how to fill out a tax return.
Yeah. Like, tell me how I need to stay in line with my taxes. Yeah,
exactly. But otherwise, it's been all right. And today's show, I'm actually looking forward to it because I'm a bit of a geek.
Yeah,
personally. So, you know, when we start talking, because we're talking about app development today, and I think our big question, we want to know, are apps still a thing, you know, in 2018? Because, you know, there was a time when everyone wanted an app.
Mm.
And I think on my phone, I think I have at least 100 apps, and I know that I hardly use like 15 of them.
I think that's where the real challenge is. Hey, you get all these different apps, and then when you run out of space, you start deleting again.
Exactly. So for today, we are going to be talking about app development. Is it still a thing in 2018? And one of the things we're trying to answer is the cost around app development. Is it still worth it to be gaining those skills? So in terms of costs, is some interesting statistics. In the USA, the average app will set you back a minimum of about 70,000 Rand. But this app will not have any advanced location-based services or any useful web services or API integration. The 70,000 has to do with the US, but later in the show you're gonna see that in South Africa the bar is a bit lower and you can actually get some world class service. And then according to nextweb.com, if you look at the initial cost of making some of the biggest apps that are in existence right now, Twitter is estimated to have been made initially for what would be today 3.5 million Rand, Instagram 4.2 million Rand, Facebook 7 million Rand, Pinterest 1.68 million Rand, and then WhatsApp around the same at 1.68 million Rand. So we're going to be, you know, those are the things that we're going to be talking about. And Hlengiwe, how can people, you know, join in the discussion and let us know, you know, if they still think that apps are, you know, still a thing or not?
Those are mighty big figures before we move on.
Yeah, they are. It's not chump
just
change.
A young 7 million. You know what I'm saying?
A young one.
So our listeners can get a hold of us on the following social media platforms. It's on Facebook. We are VFM, Voice of Wits, and Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we are found at VFM, and our hashtag is Business Buzz. On WhatsApp, we are available on 084-078-4912. They can also stream live on www.vfm.co.za, and our podcasts are available on www.vits.journalism.co.za/business, and then they can always just follow us on live on Vits on Voice of Vits FM 88.1.
So you heard it, we are 88.1 and we're here on Power until about 7 PM. On the other side of this, we get into the Business Buzz.
Business Rap with Ken Sweatman.
It's time for us to get into the Business Wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you the roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we're joined by our financial expert. We have Ken Swettenham. How are you, Ken?
I'm very well this evening, and yourself?
No, we're doing all right, but I think our economy is a bit on edge at the moment. Maybe not on edge, but I think if there was a confused face emoji, that's what our economy is having right now, because this week we had, I think, the third finance minister being announced in the space of about 12 months. What's going on?
Well, yes, if we add it up from the original firing of Nene back in 2015, and then we had Des Van Rooyen for, I think, 3 or 4 days, and then we had Pravin Gordhan, and we had Nene back again, now we've got Peter Mboweni. So we're basically 5 finance ministers in the last 3 years. And unfortunately, the finance portfolio is one of the high-profile portfolios in the country. Basically, everybody knows who the finance minister is. Not all of us know who the arts and culture minister is. So it's a very high-profile portfolio. And of course, the finance minister is the face of the South African economy, not only within our country, but worldwide as well. And having 5 different people in this portfolio, after, if those of us are old enough to remember, having Trevor Menu in the portfolio from 1994 for many, many, many years and doing a good job, and that showed stability in the economy and stability in the portfolio. And we haven't got that anymore. And it's not sending a good message to the international rating agencies. It's not sending a good message to possible investors in this country. And at a time when our economy is really, really in the doldrums, and in fact, I read this week in the worst downturn since the end of the Second World War, that's well over 70 years, it's not sending a good message at all, unfortunately. Yeah.
And what is the general feeling around in the economy around Tito Mboweni? He is the former Reserve Bank governor, and to my knowledge, relatively scandal-free. Is that switch over to the finance portfolio as opposed to treasury going to be a big change for him, or will he just take it in stride?
Well, it's an interesting one, because late last week, when it seemed obvious that the now former Minister Nene looked like he was on his way out, I was thinking, who are the ANC going to appoint? They've traditionally appointed from within their own ranks. And I personally couldn't think of anybody. And when Tito Mboweni's name was announced, I thought, well, yes, obviously, he's probably the only person within the ANC who could have possibly have taken this role. And that's after Mr. Mboweni himself, as recently as February this year, tweeted that he had no interest in any government or further government role. Obviously, there were some private discussions behind closed doors between our president and Mr. Mboweni, which changed his mind. But yes, just very briefly, he is an ex-Labour minister of the country. He, as you mentioned, he's an ex-minister, governor of the Reserve Bank. He is, again, also to my knowledge, scandal-free. He's probably the best the ANC could have done. Recent turmoil in the markets over the last 2 or 3 days has not been because of the new appointment. And there has been talk of possibly the ANC should have looked outside of their own party, even into the private sector. We have many, many wonderful economists in this country, of which possibly one of them could have been offered the job. But as I said, the ANC has had a tradition of appointing the finance minister from within their own party, and I can't think of anybody else better than Mr. Mboweni.
Now, you've just mentioned the fact that the markets are in a bit of turmoil this week, and you categorically said that it's not because of the finance portfolio. So what's going on in the markets?
Well, it's all to do, and this is something we've spoken about on your show before, it's all to do with what's happening in other parts of the world, particularly America. America are raising interest rates, or threat of raising interest rates. A few years ago, when interest rates were falling, and in fact, America was offering interest rates of just 0.25% per annum, but the big corporate money in America was looking for other areas where they could get better growth. And obviously, emerging markets in South Africa were offering much, much better rates, and money was pouring into our country, and that was good for our markets. America now raising rates, and that's a threat that money will leave our shores and go back to America, because it's a more stable economy, and they're thinking, well, if we can get 2 or 3% in a stable economy, it's better than 5, 6, or 7% in a not so stable economy, and that's what spooked the markets. It also doesn't help when Donald Trump, who has come up with all sorts of wonderful comments since his inauguration 2.5 years ago, he came up saying that there's craziness in the American Reserve Bank. He's effectively, it would be like our president calling the Reserve Bank governor crazy. And comments like that have spooked the markets worldwide. And we look at just what's happened today, the Japanese index down 3.5%, the Australian index down 2.6%, the US itself down just under 1%. Our market at lunchtime today was down 2.6%, and it rallied, in inverted commas, to only be down 1.1% at the end of the day. Yesterday it was also down 2.6%. Financials dropped 2.4% in a day. So we're now at levels close to where we were in around May 2015, and we are down approximately 14% year-to-date on our all-share index. So it's not good for the markets, it's not good for the country, and it's not good for anybody who might be invested in any sort of equity-based investment.
So that was us on the line with Ken Swettenham. If you are an investor in the equities realm, you should be a bit scared at the moment because international pressure has actually caused the JSE to actually come down quite a bit. You heard 2.5% down this week and 14% down to date from, I think, 2015, like what Ken was saying. The other big news coming out is that we have a new finance minister, quote unquote, because we have Tito Mboweni, former Reserve Bank governor, coming in to fulfill the role after Mr. Nene decided that he wanted to do the right thing. And can we say retire? but anyway, that's it in terms of the business wrap. On the other side of this, we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Wrap with Ken Swetman. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the Buffalo Index. That's the part of the show where we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. We have the lovely Hlengiwe Zondo telling us what your 100 Rand actually means to you. I mean, it's the one thing we all have, and she's going to tell us what it means. Hlengiwe?
I don't know about all of us having that 100 Rand. Do you mind sharing? But yes, the state of your 100 Rand today. Since we're talking about apps today, we've decided to snoop around and find out the cost of the following. Making an app using a developer, the cost of app making software, and the cost of getting some app making tutorials so you can get coding classes. So we're starting off with having a professional make you a good app. So locally, you can get a professional software development studio to create something for you for as little as 20,000 rands. So that's 200 buffaloes. And up to 3 million rands, which is 30,000 buffaloes on the very high end. And if you're looking to develop the app yourself, the cost of a good app-making software depends on what business model the software company uses. Bobile is considered to be the best app-making software for mobile apps, and they have a number of packages. If you want to go all in, you can go for the $30 per month option, which is 4.4 buffaloes per month, and that will give you a full suite of their features. And then moving on to the classes that you can actually take to develop your own app, the app-trepreneur courses that are offered by IT Varsity South Africa, they have an intensive one-year accredited app development course that's geared to make you more than just a good app developer. It's designed to put you on the road to becoming an app entrepreneur as well. I mean, that is what they say. Then there's the course. The course is rated NQF level 5, and it costs 20,000 rands, which is 200 buffaloes. But they're running a special at the moment for 15,000 rands, which is 150 buffaloes. And if you feel like you can learn on your own, there's also like online courses that you can take to make sure that you produce the next IT app, going from either like Mixit to Facebook, whatever it is that you're looking to do. Yeah. Udacity, for example, is a profitable online education organization, and their iOS engineer nano degree program gives you the foundation to become a Silicon Valley standard engineer. You can get the latest iOS technology with them. And to join the course, you'll need $199 per month, and that's roughly 29 buffaloes per month.
It's not cheap, eh?
Not at all.
But I feel like the numbers are a bit lower than the other ones.
The other ones we had at the beginning.
The US numbers.
Like, I mean, first try it on your own. Try and save that 7 million. You know, if you can do it in-house, try and do it in-house.
No. The difference is quite crazy. So we're talking about app development today. So on the other side of this, we're going to get into it properly and actually talk to some people around what it actually means. And also want to hear, you know, what are you doing with your apps? So on the other side of this, we get into the business of apps in 2018. This is The Business Buzz.
The Business Buzz.
Welcome back to The Business Buzz. We are talking app development today, but before we sort of get into this, remember that you can keep in touch with us. We are Vow FM on Facebook, that's the Voice of Vits, and we have our other Facebook page, that's the Vits Radio Academy, and then you can also find us on Twitter, that's at Vow FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So we went out on the streets, but specifically thing you went out on the streets. What were you asking the people?
I was asking them to tell me all kinds of things around app development, whether what apps they use the most, what they think of the actual, you know, industry in its entirety. Do they think that it's dying? Do they think that it's thriving? So we got all kinds of different opinions.
Okay, cool. Here's what they had to say.
Basically, I have about 5 apps, and it's almost all my social media, like Twitter, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram. But I hardly use Instagram and Twitter. I use it when there's free Wi-Fi. You know, Instagram Charles data. And I also have my FNB app. I use that a lot. I need to check on my money. That's very important. And I recently deleted my, Uber app. Because I didn't have a lot of space. So if ever you want to create and come up with another app, no, I'm not interested because you guys take a lot of space, eh?
Okay, so the apps I use are really functional ones. I only need apps that make my life better. So I'll have Taxify or Uber to transport myself. I'll have, you know, any other app, maybe a digital app, like a photographic app because I'm a photographer. But functional apps. I don't want anything else that is really just to fill up space. I mean, it's a question of space as well because it is on your phone. It's a great thing. I think the nice thing about apps is that people are now starting to find, I think, pain points or like things people need in their lives to make their lives functional. So yeah, it's a great space to go into because people need stuff. I mean, we're living in a world that is always innovating, and so that's a great thing to have apps. But yeah, for me, apps generally are just there to make my life better. I only got Taxify because my phone allowed it. I'm not really a phone person either, so it's not a thing. But if you can just, do my thing.
All right, so I don't really use a lot of apps on my phone. The one that I'll probably use mostly is WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram. Okay, no, not really Instagram. But so far, WhatsApp and Facebook, mainly for business. So that's the main reason I would use an app. And the one that I probably will download recently would be the Money Manager. So anything that has to do with apps has to relate with business or money.
How's it? My name is Lenzito. In terms of apps, I do use some of your more common apps, like your WhatsApp, because obviously otherwise you can't hustle. Other people don't accept calls anymore. So, yeah, WhatsApp is there. Facebook occasionally. But WhatsApp is like daily bread. You have to use it. I do go on Instagram every now and then. I wouldn't say I'm big on apps, but they do have their uses, and especially when you're pushing the free marketing side, that assists. So startups have no excuse not to go onto apps, and I think we should get more apps because apps has made life a little bit more convenient, even though it has impacted on the. On society, we've gotten more lazier, but I just think we shouldn't lose the work ethic, sharpen our way.
I feel that apps are dead. Well, just I feel really if it's not a utility app, if it's something consumer doesn't need to be using on a daily basis, it's not worth having on a phone. So that's my opinion on apps.
I normally use Uber because I think it's convenient for me, and I'm always traveling and going into meetings and all that with work. And then I have this Gautrain app that I find very interesting because you can check everything that you want to do, your schedule, about your train, and your the amount of money that you left with on your card. And then WhatsApp. I think WhatsApp it's the most famous one on everyone's phone, not just my phone. So I use WhatsApp a lot, especially when I communicate with people, friends, family, and everything. And in terms of emergency, that's WhatsApp. And then I have other apps that I don't actually like. I actually deleted them. Your translating apps, I tried it once, and then I was translating English to Italian. So my Italian was gibberish. So the Italian guy was like, "What are you saying right now?" So I deleted that app. And then others, even dating apps, I don't use those because I feel like we're eliminating ourselves from reality. So yeah. Would I like to have more apps on my phone? Yeah, if they can maybe extend the space, because you can have your 32 gigabyte space on your phone, but still not enough, right? Because of music, documents, and all that stuff that you store on your phone. So apps, I feel like apps take like a lot of space on your phone. And nah, I wouldn't install any apps until maybe 100 gig or 1 terabyte phone space.
So you heard what some of our people, had to say. Some interesting thoughts coming through from there. Anyway, where did you find these people?
Out and about. Names and addresses.
what was the most surprising thing for you about people's apps usage?
I think what was prevalent was people use pretty much like the same apps.
Yeah.
And it was a very few people who were excited about getting more apps on their phones. Most of them were concerned about their space and about utility. And some of the stuff was really just like they're not really using it every day, so yeah, they don't see the need for having it. Yeah. And and some were like, it's a dying industry.
But to tell us if it's really, really that much of a dying industry, we have Yohi. I'm going to Yohi Myber.
Yes, that's yes. Good.
In studio with us, he is a director at Dragonfly Marketing, who have created apps for institutions such as StatsSA and companies such as Aspen and Superga, just to mention some. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk.
So, having listened to what some of our listeners are saying, can we just start by just asking, do you know how many apps we are using on our phone on average? Just the average. So
probably about five.
Yeah.
The Apple, for instance, has the opportunity now where you can unpack or unload apps that only have been used for a while.
Yeah.
Because I know you're going to fill your phone with unnecessary stuff and then it'll just unpack itself. But it's about five. The new ones come on board, they try it for a few seconds, few minutes, and they dump it. And games is one. They love games, and then they get bored and they dump it.
Yeah. So in terms of that, can we start by just asking what is the usual process for developing an app in terms of the timelines, the cost, and all that?
Okay.
Yes.
Right. I'm looking around the studio to see who's going to actually do that. Firstly, don't.
Yeah.
Don't do an app.
Yeah.
Okay. Secondly, it's cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Thirdly, timeline. You can cut timeline, but then you're going to cut quality and you're going to cut down on testing phases.
Yeah.
And if you don't test properly, you're going to have a nonsense app.
Yeah.
and it's going to fold, and you're going to have ongoing updates and revisions.
Mm.
Facebook does a revision every 2 weeks, but that's something they fix in their back end. Sometimes they do a fix, a nice fix. FMB just did a nice fix on their app.
Yeah.
We can even move the icons around, and so that's a great one.
Yeah.
But normally it's all in the background, it's security features and so on they work on.
Yeah. So if I come to you and I say I have that next big idea, can you just lead our listeners through what the process would be if I, if I'm adamant, I've got 3 million rand, I've got, we were just looking at numbers earlier on, and it sounds like 3 million rand is a good amount for a good corporate app, and I'm saying I need this thing to be done. What's that process like?
The first step is you don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Because you tell somebody about it, it's pre-disclosure.
Yeah.
So you can negate any patents that you might have in the future.
Yeah.
So you don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Secondly, you have to tell somebody.
Yeah.
So then you have a non-disclosure agreement known as an NDA.
Yeah.
And you can get copies of these and from the internet. You can go to a lawyer friend.
Mm.
You're all students here. You've got people that can do that for you. But you have an NDA that is signed, which locks the person down or the organization down there. They won't steal your idea.
Yeah.
And then you only disclose. You don't disclose beforehand.
Yeah.
In terms of, so we're talking about app development and it being a, you know, not such a great place to go into considering competition and many other things. What would be an alternative for somebody to pursue who had an idea that was for the app?
Right. Very good one there. A web application development. Not an app for sales, but an application that runs on the internet. And it looks like an app, but it's not an app. It doesn't sit in the iOS store. It doesn't sit in the Play store. It can, so you can sit on your own web page, and people can download it, and they can. It looks like an app on your phone when you use it. It's much cheaper, and you don't have to apply to all the rigorous conditions that, for instance, Apple has.
Yeah,
which is good. They have it there for a specific reason. But especially if you want to test the idea, instead of laying out a fortune in development cost, do a web-based application development.
Yeah.
Looks the same, acts the same, but it's for only for web, and it works.
That's actually quite great, because it then leads to the next question of what, how can I put this? What then makes an app successful?
Mm.
Because I think that's a question that the millions of people that are uploading apps to the various app stores are trying to conquer when they, you know, put up these things. At the end of September, we actually had a young man in studio, Brandon Kynock, who had, I think, one of the most downloaded games on the App Store, you know, in studio. Young man, very brilliant. And the irony of his story, he was telling us, he was saying that the app that succeeded was the one that took him 3 weeks to make. But the app that took him 2 years to make didn't really do that well.
Yeah.
So is there a formula?
That's $1 billion question.
Well, if you, when you have your app and you believe in it and it's been tested by your friends and family, and rather you're strangers, they will give you true reflection.
Yeah.
Then it's a case of marketing it.
Yeah.
You have to market the app. You have to put it out in the social media. You have to put it out there so people can find it. 2 years ago, around about 2 years ago, the daily release of Android applications were over 4,000 a day worldwide, and Apple was over 6,000. So it's much higher than that now, and you're competing in that market space. Also, we found that people don't do their research, and they then want to do an app, but a similar app already exists.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. Mm. You haven't got the legs to run with it.
So, I every time you talk, I'm just getting more questions in my head. Getting more questions in my head. Okay, so I come to you, whether it's a web app or whether it's a proper app, and then I'm asking for advice on how do I make money off this thing.
Well, if you want to make money off it, you got to have to monetize the application itself. So you've got to sell something in the app. For instance, you're going to sell tools or health or machine guns or knives or whatever it is that your app is, the game has got involved. Candy Crush, you buy lives. And so that's how they make their money. But it takes a lot of planning. And it doesn't help to come and say, I've got an idea. An idea takes a split second.
Yeah.
You now have to go and document what it is you want to do. And that's where the work comes in. Mm-hmm. And there's an expectation that I've got the idea, I'm going to sit back, and somebody else is going to do everything. They can't see in your head. They can't see what you've envisaged. They can't get it. You've got to document it. You've got to put it down there. You've got to put it out. And you control the process.
Yeah.
The developers, they're not there to come up with the brilliant idea that you've got in your mind.
Yeah.
You've got to tell them that, and they will develop it. But so first step, non-disclosure agreement. Mm. After that, there's a document called the full specification document.
Yeah.
That is where everything is defined in the process of how the app's going to look. And if that is not done properly, the developers develop accordingly. So halfway down the line, you realize you left out a piece. Now you want to add it in. Yeah, you can add it in. It's amendment document you have to complete. You have to sign off. It gets built separately. And if it can be worked in at that stage, it gets worked in. Otherwise, it waits till the app is done, and then you do that development.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Development minimum 4 months. 1 month you can write off for testing purposes. Alpha tester, beta testing. Apple does a flight test.
Yeah.
Testing takes a lot, and then you fix up the bugs. Also, testing brings the people, and they realize, I actually missed something. Now I need it. So then you go back to the document and says, but the document doesn't say that. You didn't write it down.
Yeah.
So we didn't cost it. So we can do it. Here's a document, fill it in, amendment. You pay more money, it gets done. The idea as well is applications can be a never-ending process. So you do what needs to be done to get the application there, and then you start working and correcting, adding revisions, adding new features, whatever. That is, most apps does that.
Yeah.
They're all together.
So in terms of Dragonfly, do you guys, apart from just the development side, do you help, what do you call them? Can we call them the creators, the ones that come up with the idea, your clients? Do you help them like with marketing strategies?
Yes.
Or things about whether to have a price on the app, how to price the app, in-app and in-app purchases, you know, what type of revenue model would be the best, all of that stuff.
Yes. We can advise. Yeah. At the end of the day, the client decides.
Yeah.
You decide what you want to do, how much. To run an app, you're probably going to have to run it for a year, maybe 2 years before you even start making money. Application cost, whatever it might be, whether it's 500,000 or more, you're going to spend that amount on your marketing in the first period.
Yeah.
So you've got to double whatever budget you've got.
And what do you think has set you guys apart in terms of being the sort of client or supplier of choice for those specific services?
We are not a dedicated application development company. We're a creative agency.
Okay.
But we develop applications to clients' requirements. We do a lot of other things for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we develop applications, and we're fortunate that we've had a few that has been successful. Not us, but the client.
Okay.
And once again, when the application is done and it's paid for and it's running, then all the code, the intellectual property, goes to the client.
Oh, I was actually going to ask
that question.
No, it's not our business. We don't keep the intellectual property.
Yeah.
And that's why there's also a cost, because it belongs to you.
Yeah.
It's nothing as bad as you own something, but somebody else owns part of it. And there's always going to be problems.
Yeah.
So just pay for it, get it done.
Okay. Our last question, in the interest of time, infrastructure-wise, that's the other thing I wanted to just get from you. Do you guys host the actual applications, like the servers that they run on, the databases that they're pulling data from, or do you usually make use? Because I can understand that some corporates will have data centers of their own. But if I'm just me and I've just come up with this idea and I have nothing of that sort, do you build it out for me and host it for me, or do you outsource that?
If it's a web-based, all the hosting is done by internet service providers, ISPs.
Mm.
And you've got to be a registered ISP to actually do this in the world. You can't just host it yourself.
Mm.
So it's got to be, if it's on the internet, it's the rules and regulations. The Domain Association of South Africa controls a lot of it and so on. So if it's a web-based application, you can host it at any ISP. Mm. Doesn't have to be at a specific ISP. If it's a Android or iOS app, it sits in the store.
Mm.
If there's data that needs to move, that sits in the back end, and you can either there's ways of doing it. But yes, it can go through a data storage facility. If you do, for instance, payments, you can choose to do payments in your app using the service providers such as Apple to do the payments, and they deduct a portion and you get paid out the remainder.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have in-app purchases through FastPay or whatever, and that has a different model. And again, if you've got any payment situation on an app, it has to be compliant.
Mm-hmm. Wise thoughts coming through from Yohi. He is from Dragonfly, and they are a creative agency that does a whole host of things, but app development is one of the big things that they do. You heard him. I think one of the big pieces of advice that he said is if you have that bright idea, don't tell anyone. But if you're going to tell someone, be very specific about what you say, because when it comes to actually making corrections and revisions on what you've said to the developer, it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you emotions. It's going to cost you effort. And your effort as well. Thank you so much, Yohi.
Pleasure.
On the other side of this, we are going to continue our conversation around apps development in 2018. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are talking app development in 2018 right here on today's Business Buzz show. We just came from talking to Yohi Myberg, who is a director at Dragonfly, around apps development and what it actually means. We're going to continue the conversation now, and we're going to be talking to Lynette Handemark, who is co-founded Youthful and Beautiful, and they have over 17 years of experience in the tech, digital marketing, and mobile solutions space. Lynette co-founded Specialist Mobile Solutions Consultancy, Youthful and Beautiful, back in the day, and she's also regarded as one of the top 30 most influential women in SA digital marketing. Lynette also contributes regularly for Biz Community. How are you, Lynette?
Hi there. I've had better days. I've got a little bit of tonsillitis, so I'm apologizing in advance for my husky voice. I always wanted to be a rock star, so.
Thank you so much for talking to us. We really do appreciate the fact that you've taken this time to be with us. So, just as we begin, can you tell us a little bit about Youthful and Beautiful and the kind of services that you offer?
Okay, so my company, it's a mobile solutions company. So we basically create or help brands or companies, whoever you are really, if you want to get into the mobile space, we are here to basically help you get on the right track to have a good foundation, because, you know, like building a house, you can't just go and start building a house without a plan, without a good foundation. You need to have the correct building blocks in place. So we are there to assist brands with that. And basically make sure you have something that's going to be of world-class standards. So we focus a lot on user experience and design, because that's the ultimate decide on whether somebody's going to use your app. You know, it needs to be really simple. It needs to be slick. It needs to provide a good service right from the moment you click on that or tap on that icon on your phone. And then we also, if companies want us to develop the app as well, we take it a step further, and we develop it based on the best technologies that suit your budget. And I'm going to emphasize on budget, because that's also quite a deciding factor. And make sure that you get the best app out there. But apart from that, we also provide consultation services, because, you know, the mobile app space has been around now for a while. I've been particularly involved, as you said, for quite a few years. So quite a few brands, what I've noticed is that they've gone and they've created some sort of an app. They've put it out there, but it's not doing quite what they expected it to do, or users are not happy with it. So that's when we go in and we try help brands, give them tips and advice and consult on how they can actually get this on the right track as well.
I think that takes us to our next question, which is, you know, mobile apps seem to have become something of a big phenomenon in the tech industry. What do you think propelled this rise, and how would you say this rise has transformed the mobile tech industry?
Well, I mean, I predicted that this was going to be on the rise and this was going to take over back in 2011. If you go back and look at some of the keynotes that I used to present, it was always, you know, mobile is going to be the future. Mm. And now mobile is the present. And the big and what propelled us, quite simple, is your mobile phone. With time, mobile phones, especially smartphones, became a lot cheaper. You know, with Android, the cheaper handsets. So now, rather than people buying a feature phone, which was always very, very popular in Africa especially, you know, they can afford to buy a cheaper smartphone, and with that they've got access to apps and all of that that goes with it. So that's what basically propelled it. And, you know, it's not about the future being mobile, it's the present being mobile. Everybody has got a mobile phone, as you know, irrespective of the income level you are in, everybody has a phone. You know, it's become this necessity and people want to interact with that.
Yeah.
And that is why it's all about knowing your audience and providing the best solution for your audience, because, you know, especially in South Africa and Africa, data is really expensive. You know, I follow this quite closely, and the costs are not really coming down. So people want to use apps. They want to get the best out of it, but they don't want their airtime to go away after 5 seconds. Mm. I mean, not even I want that. So it's important that the apps that you design and create, it takes this into consideration for your target audience, especially for students. I mean, I was a student, okay, many years ago, but, you know, still, I don't want to spend money unnecessarily or waste my money, but I still want to use my phone. I still want to get the best user experience. So give me apps that's going to be, you know, data conscious.
I agree. And what should users be looking for when they're using, downloading, or choosing applications?
Well, the size of your app is most important, for one. I mean, if you take things like, and I work in the magazine industry as well, you know, some of these magazine apps, they consume a lot of data. You know, I remember when I worked with Wired magazine many years ago, it was almost half a gig to download that app. So before you download an app, make sure you actually see the size of the app. And also, just do some research as well, just to see how much data that app is going to be consuming. Because sometimes the app might be, like, really small to download, but then with time, you will see that it's actually consuming a lot of data. So it's important to actually just check that out as well from a data, you know, data perspective. And, of course, you know, on Wi-Fi, it doesn't matter. But, you know, if you're using mobile data, then it does actually matter. And also, most importantly, there's a lot of apps out there, I mean, especially over the years. You know, there's literally millions of apps on each app store, and quite a few of them are quite similar. So I think it's important as a user as well for you to actually work out exactly what you want this app to do, because, you know, you've got A-class apps versus, you know, the essay Z-class apps out there. So don't just go and search for the, you know, search and get the first one that comes up. I would say just spend a little bit of time and look at what you actually want, because some brands, and I'll give you an example. Last year I was asked to review a property app that APSA launched. And I just went to go and search for this app on the App Store, and I couldn't find it. You know, I had so many other property apps, so you know, the chances of me downloading the incorrect app was so high that I eventually had to phone the PR people that asked me to review it and say, please just send me the link. For it, and there wasn't even apps on the, you know, on the main keywords. So that's why I'm saying you need to just spend a little bit more time on the App Store, because not all brands actually get it right in terms of, you know, like you've got your Google SEO and all of that. There's also something similar for the App Store, but not all brands have got that right. But yeah, make sure you download the correct app.
And what should developers take into consideration regarding their consumers, and what have been some of the key trends that you've observed in this industry?
Well, developers definitely need to take into consideration their target market. You know, most people fall into this trap, even though I've been speaking about it for many years. But up till today, people think, okay, we put an app there and it must just serve the purpose for everybody. And that's not the case. You have to limit or what should I say, you have to classify who your users are going to be. The only time I've ever worked on an app that catered for almost everybody was Sterkinico, when I launched that in 2011, the first version. So you really, really need to pinpoint exactly who is going to be using this app and design a user experience for those, you know, for that target audience. Because, you know, if it's a very functional app, like a banking app or financial services app, people want to be able to transact with that app really, really quickly. So the user experience needs to be really quick, really slick, really clear. And you need to get to your chosen task in the minimal amount of steps. Which brings me to the key trends. And again, because apps and mobile have been around for quite a while now, it's an expectation from the consumer that whatever you do, you know, especially if you're going to be asking me for personal data when I start using this app, that this app is going to be personalized for me. That's an expectation. You know, don't make it generic. So, you know, companies who do it right, I suppose, are, you know, like Uber, because when you launch the Uber app, it will give you your most recent destinations or it will give you your most frequent destinations. So that makes it really easy. You don't have to go and, you know, like I don't have to type in that I want to go, say, to Century City all the time. If I'm going there all the time, that would be sort of like one of my first searches that come up, so I can just click and go. So that's really, really important. Second thing is also, if you're a brand or you're a company with more than just a mobile presence, for example, if you're a retailer, for example, chances are you've got a presence on web, you've got a presence in store, you know, you've got all these other channels. So it's important to not treat your mobile solution, your app, as a silo. It really needs to integrate and connect all the dots. And this is a term that we call omnichannel, where it really needs to just provide the seamless user experience because, you know, nothing is more frustrating than that you see some offers on the app, say for Pick and Pay, for example. You go into Pick and Pay and you see the offers are completely different. You know, nobody's really got time for those sort of things. And also, you know, in terms of coupon redemption and all of that, it needs to all basically work seamlessly together. And another big one I would say is definitely without a doubt, a shift from more contextual marketing to cognitive marketing. And what I mean from there is previously it was all about delivering the right message at the right time. You know, that's always what it's been about in terms of especially of the mobile device. And now fast forwarding to 2018 where we are, It's not just about the context. You know, as mentioned, it's a very personal device now, especially when you are giving personal information. But sometimes you don't even need to give personal information to the, you don't have to actually input that because this device, you know, you've got things like location data and all of that in there. So you can actually gather a lot of information about the user just based on the user patterns. And the companies that get this right is Amazon, because they constantly, when you're browsing the Amazon app, you can see the most frequent items that you are browsing. So then they would recommend, you know, similar sort of items.
Yeah.
So that is the trend. It's like, you know, you are understanding my behavior. So when I open that app, start giving me relevant products based on what I am likely to be doing.
Yeah, and I think this brings us to our last question. For people who are looking to venture into this space, what is the future looking like for mobile applications?
Oh, the space is looking, it's absolutely tremendous. You know, there's so much potential. I also judge a lot of mobile awards, and most recently the Price Check e-commerce awards, and I'm seeing so many new businesses, and it's so exciting because I'm seeing new businesses coming in, giving these mobile solutions that are actually making a difference to people's lives. You know, they want to actually communicate and they actually want to, they want to improve the efficiency of what they're doing. So FinTech, for example, is quite a good use case in that there's, you know, I mean, especially for that, it's quite an unbanked market. So you've got a lot of FinTech solutions out there that just make it really easy for the consumer to transact.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say there's so much of potential, but the key thing, especially with our context, South Africa, because this is a big mistake, and I just want to emphasize this, is that we look at what tends to happen is people look at American and UK case studies and try to replicate it here. It doesn't work. And I've seen it not working, and then people are, you know, they spend all this money, and it's not working. You need to understand the South African audience and understand, you know, don't take a solution from overseas and just apply it here. It doesn't work. And the most important thing, you know, tying up everything that I said today is understand the target audience, understand that data is very, very sensitive in terms of price, and make things really simple. It's all about the user experience, and this is also something that I've come to, that everybody wants to just go and start developing an app. It doesn't work that way. You really need to spend some time understanding the strategy, understanding what sort of problems you are trying to solve.
Again,
this app needs to solve a problem. That's why Uber, Domestly, Sweepstart, all of that works so well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. That was Lynette Handemark from Useful and Beautiful, a mobile solutions consultancy.
I think that definitely brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening, and thank you to everyone who spoke to Hlengiwe and just told them about their app development, because you know we actually enjoyed just hearing some of that feedback. Thank you to Yohi for coming to the studio and just giving us a roundup of the market, and then lastly to Lynette. Your takeaways.
My takeaway from the show is that be original. Don't copy. Do it because someone else is doing it.
Yeah.
Like, come up with something totally different that everyone else is going to want to follow. Someone came up with apps in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, take us on a completely different trajectory. That's what we want.
Okay, cool. And then my takeaway just has to do with... Actually, I have a takeaway from what Yohi said, and that was just the fact where he said having an app on its own, it's no longer really sustainable nowadays, having the whole a web app as opposed to having just a proper standalone app is a better solution. And you actually see it with some of the corporates. I think, you know, some of the banks, if you actually open the app, you see there's actually no data there. It's only when you're connected to a network that actually something pops up, you know, on your phone. And then from what Lynette was saying, understand when you're making an app, if you do make an app, actually make it useful and actually understand the person who's going to use the app.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of the show. Hlengiwe, how can people get in touch with us on social media to continue the conversation?
So they can get a hold of us on the following social media platforms. On Facebook, we are Vow FM, Voice of Wits, and Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we are at Vow FM, and our hashtag is Business Buzz. On WhatsApp, we are on 084-078-4912. They can also stream live on www.vowfm.co.za. And they can find our podcast of The Business Buzz on www.vids.journalism.co.za/business.
And with that, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you to our amazing team, our executive producer, that's Elna Schutz, together with our producer, Welcome Leshiva, and then our technical producer, that's Kutlwano Serame. Don't miss The Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Next up, we are a 24-hour radio station, so make sure you don't turn the dial. From myself, Mudiwa Mob, Justice Gavaza, Hlengiwe Zondo, and the rest of the team, it's good evening and take care.
The Business Buzz. Listen to The Business Buzz every Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. only on Vow FM. The Business Buzz Podcast.